Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey there, my name is Afy, also known as Bahamas. I sometimes tour around by myself or sometimes with a band, but I make albums. And I live in Nova Scotia in Canada. It's the most beautiful place in the world. I like to wake up in the morning and be on the ocean. And I feel very lucky to be here.
I wake up, fry some eggs, pull the blue jeans across my legs, and then start working, working, working on my guitar.
Do you see yourself as a guitar player first or as a singer-songwriter first?
If you asked me 10, 15 years ago, I would have immediately said I'm a guitar player. But more and more, most of my time is on songwriting and being an artist and just coming up with ideas of how to put songs across or you know, all the things around the album. Like I said, I'm enjoying that process, and with the images and the videos and all that stuff, like that part of being an artist is just so much fun to me these days. So I definitely spend much more time there. I don't practice the guitar the way I did at one time, and I would like to, but I find time is a little bit elusive for practicing. But I used to spend hours and hours and hours a day playing guitar, and my playing kind of plateaued. And then at the same time, I realized, oh, the songwriting is actually the thing that's going to give me a career. And I started just focusing on that a lot more. And I felt like my guitar playing kind of just stayed there while the songwriting went up. And I would just recently, as crazy as it sounds, I feel like I've just made some very small gains, very minor gains, where the guitar playing starting to catch up a little bit. And I can actually execute some of these things that I'm hearing in my musical mind. But I'm also spoiled. I'm surrounded by great guitar players. So Christine, who tours with me, is like, she's my favorite guitar player and just a continual source of inspiration, the way she plays. She's just a great listener. She really is an incredible listener. I think most great players are great listeners.
That keeps me from working, working, working on my guitar. I'm just working on my guitar in some nightclub, in some bar. I'm just a pecking and a singing and a hoping that we're having a good time. Over the din of the conversation, there's some musical improvisation. That's just me working, working on my guitar.
I'm just working. Welcome back to the show on the road, everybody. I'm still Z Lupitin, your Sonic Spelunker, and we are at the end of our 2023 season. The second part of our talk with Bahamas is coming up right now. And he's not just working on his guitar. I think he's working on his soul, and I think we all need a little of that. I'm going to sign off there, and I'm going to drop you right in our conversation. Peace. Well, in a way, there's two different brains that you have to have. If you think about it, most lead guitar players are not listening to lyrics. At least a lot of the folks that I've always played with, even some of my best friends who've been in my bands, they're like, oh, so that song's about your grandpa who died. I was like, dude, we've been playing this for like 7 years. You know, it's like their brain is so focused on this path that I can't even imagine how to play some of the stuff that they play. But you somehow have both of those brains. Do you feel like you're almost switching between the two live, or is it just natural at this point?
Yeah, there's a part of it that's like walking or breathing. It's just, it is who you are, right? We all have a gait. We all have a way that we speak. We all have a way that we do these things. And so the best thing to do is just not think about it and let it happen. You know, you're always kind of dancing on that line, right? Because my favorite moments of the show are when I'm fully awake, I'm there, but I'm not really focused on what I'm doing. I'm for lack of a better term, I'm just feeling it. I'm in the music.
Yeah.
And that really just feels wonderful. And it's also so fleeting because you can get distracted by a bum note or something that's going on in the audience or something that someone else plays. And then you realize, oh, I want to take this up another gear. And then you're sort of using that more active part of your musical muscles, your musical mind. Yeah, that part is important, but less interesting to me. So I think I'm trying to just spend more time in the more intuitive part of playing. Sometimes that means just playing one note or two notes and just sort of staying in that pocket until it reveals itself. What is it exactly that I was sort of getting after here, you know? I've really been enjoying Goose, that band Goose, that I was never really a big jam band fan in a huge way. And then I heard some of their tunes and it really made sense to me. Like, more is more, kind of. I just really enjoyed it, you know? And so that's been inspiring me to just kind of like take some of my tunes, which maybe I've played in the same place, and try and move them to a different place. Not to overplay, but songs that you've been playing for 10 years in standard tuning, just put your guitar and drop D and play the same song or
right.
You know, or don't play guitar and just see what the band does without your kind of influence from the guitar and see what happens there, you know?
I think a song like Sports Car, you know, again, drops us into this part of your, maybe your life where you could imagine what it was like before kids, or like if you never had kids, you know, the sort of disconnect between yourself now and yourself if you got a sports car instead of having kids, you know, this version of the self that maybe focused more on hedonism and pleasure, you know.
Back in the spring of 81, you had a boy, yeah, you had a son. What you wanted was a sports car. What you wanted was a sports car.
Well, again, you have these lines that sort of trade in humor and then hit you with the sort of little knife in the side, right? I mean, I could tell you now because you're a grown man. And when you were first born, I almost named you Trans Am, which would be a funny name for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted was a sports car, and you were not a sports car, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people, you know, and this is something that is very hard to talk about, who do regret having kids, or they miss their old selves that they're never going to get back, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, as a still a new dad, kind of feel like you, in that this is like the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really miss my other life because she's now part of that same life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think you got to like bring your kids into the party, you know, bring your kids into the music. That's the whole sort of fun part for me, is seeing how she reacts and sort of contributes to the art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's like almost like the main muse for me now, you know. I mean, well, it's like I'm writing for her, which is really cool.
It happens automatically, I think. You know, when you're a musician, so much of my world is about me,
right?
And it is very important to me and for my family life for it not to be all about me all the time. And a lot of it is, right? Like, my family does come on tour with me a fair bit. And they're quite literally living in my world, you know. It's just that's just how it is, and I feel fortunate to be able to include them on a lot of that stuff. But at the same time, it's like we have a very robust and meaningful life outside of my music. If and when I stop doing it professionally, I'll always be a musician. I'll always have a guitar, and I'll always play and write songs. But. You know, I have no doubt that we could have a meaningful and robust life that's not about me. That's just, you know, if one of my daughters gets into tennis or something like that, and I'm just like another guy who's driving them around the tennis tournaments. It's like, bring it on. I would love that. It sounds wicked. I know you look at me. I know you look at me. I know you look at me. And you wish I was a sports car.
For some reason, it reminded me of this video that's gone viral. I don't know if you're on TikTok or and all that, but this poor woman just, she's like, I'm 29 and single. And I don't know if you've seen this, but she's like, you know, I don't have kids. And so today I just, I wanted to make shishuka, you know, the special egg dish. And then I'm going to, you know, maybe go to a Beyonce concert and, I can do whatever I want because I don't have kids, and that's okay for me, you know. And all these conservative commentators started using her as like the example of like the broken millennial Gen Z selfishness or something that like if you don't have family and kids, that you're not sacrificing yourself to a greater good and you're just a selfish hedonist. You know, she's like, I just thought I was going to make eggs this morning and go to Beyonce tonight, you know?
Interesting.
In my sports car. No,
I missed out on all that. I mean, the internet is more and more, unfortunately, I just think it's I hate to use the word toxic because I do think it's kind of overused, but it is toxic. You know, I think you got to give her the benefit of the doubt and assume that she's genuine and feels that way about her own life. And if that's the case, you're not hurting anybody else, then rock on, sister. Do whatever you want. Go to Beyonce every day of the week. Eat whatever you want for breakfast. For me, I can say, you know, I had music. I love music. I really centered my whole life around music. And then I had children. And that was infinitely better than anything I've ever achieved in music.
Right.
So for me, if I was speaking to her or someone directly about the issue, I would just say, well, for me, it's not even close. I love playing music and I've had a little bit of success in it and got to play with people that I really love and got to travel the world. I got to do all this great stuff under the guise of music, and none of it even comes close to when your kid runs up to you and gives you a hug. So if you know that, if you actually know that, I wish we started earlier. I wish we had 10 kids, but that's just me.
What you wish for. Yeah.
We'll see what the internet, you know, maybe I'll be the target of someone else's ire after saying that, you know, but we do live in a time when you can do whatever you want. And everyone seems to have an opinion about whatever an app should be doing. And I have a hard time relating to that particularly, because it's like, to me, it's like, why are there so many people that are spending so much time seeking out things that they don't like? And then further to that, they're spending time telling other people that they don't like those things.
Yeah.
It's like, that thing's not for you. Just why don't you tell me about what you actually are interested in? That is so much, that's such a better world to be in. It's like, but you know, the internet tends to reward negativity and cynicism and all the kind of worst parts about what fascinates us. So maybe I shouldn't be surprised, you know?
What if your kids are like, Dad, I know maybe you don't recommend this, but I want to be a touring singer-songwriter. I'm almost like it to be like,
I mean, no,
is there like that moment where you're like, wait, are you sure? Or is it just like, no, do it?
Absolutely. No, I think, you know, if they show any enthusiasm, you have to fan the flames, you know? And if it's underwater welding, or if it's being a singer-songwriter, or ringette, or whatever it ends up being, the goal is to really like fan the flames of their passion. Whether it's my own kids or anyone else, I would say it's never been a better time. Like the barriers to entry are way lower than they used to be. Of course, you have to deal with
the economics that we're living in, and all the sort of the harder parts of modernity, which is navigating all the detritus that's out there too, right? There's just so much stuff, and sort of finding a way to get your stuff elevating a little bit so people have a chance to hear it is the challenge. But I mean, when you think about, even when I started, I'm not that old, but I've been playing for 20 years. Like, we recorded my first albums on tape, not because it was like a novelty, but that's what the studio had. You needed a label and you needed like infrastructure to kind of do a lot of this stuff. And it's like, now, like, you could use the same laptop that we're doing the Zoom call, like, is basically what we record on. And you can upload your own songs and you can make your own Instagram page and you can really promote yourself. If you want to, you can do that now. And not that long ago, these tools just weren't available to us. So in many ways, I think if it's something that you're passionate about, I just would encourage people to pursue it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have mixed feelings now as a creator that maybe hasn't been able to, you know, feel financially secure in a while. Because that's the thing that's, you know, becoming more scary as like you feel like you're responsible for this little person. You know, my wife got laid off a couple months ago, and it was always like, well, you know, she always has the good stable salary job, and it's like, not anymore. And so all of a sudden there's a lot of these doubts where you're like, I just was again touring Europe for, you know, 10 days, and there was some travel mayhem that happened with a lot of bands who were, flights got canceled, you had to book all this new stuff, you lost all sorts of money. And it's just like so great in some ways, you know, you're playing through for 5,000 people in Denmark and people know your songs, and then the next day you're sitting on the floor of the airport figuring out, do we have enough money to book all these new flights for 7 people? And you know, and the stress level was so high that I'm just like, do I want that for her? it's 10 hours ago. That's like, it's like the highs and the lows are so extreme that, you know, I am having these moments now where I'm like, yes, I should probably find something that can be more secure while still doing music. But I don't know what that is, you know, because I love this so much, you know.
Well, so much of what you're talking about is your sense of identity, or at least that's the way it sounds to me, right? And all I would say was, you were an artist and you were a musician before anyone else recognized that you were an artist or a musician.
Right.
And that's why I say, for me, if my career ended tomorrow, I would still be a musician. I would still be an artist.
Of course.
I would still play music, you know? Like, that's where you realize, wow, it's actually for me to define who I am. What are the things, you know, you're saying, okay, I'm a father now, I'm a husband, I'm a musician, all these things. That's for you, that's for no one else. Into the unknown. Oh, I'm into the unknown. I'm into the unknown. And right. when you do have a bit of success, I mean, we've seen it so many times, like people, they really can mess their life up because they confuse their identity with what other people think of them, right? And if you have a lot of success really quickly, that can be just crushing. That can destroy people.
Yeah.
Because they don't have their identity kind of solidified. And so they have this meteoric rise, and then quite often, just as quickly, they're irrelevant. And so you're like, wait a second, who am I? Through, you know, I just was taken on this roller coaster. So, I mean, you're all those things already, whether you're on tour, whether you're not on tour, whether you're making money, whether you're not making money, you are all those things. And so in some ways you can take comfort in that, right? And I would say musicians and artists are, in a lot of ways, they're better prepared for navigating the gig economy and modern working life, part-time jobs or a combination of doing different jobs that ultimately add up to, you know, earning enough money to support you and your family and stuff. It's like musicians are, they've been doing that forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of people getting laid off and having trouble. They're graduating with degrees and they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and they're having trouble, just as much financial trouble figuring it out, you know?
Right.
I don't think that's exclusive to being a musician. I think for a lot of people, they do this, the illusion of security that can kind of come with more traditional paths that appeals to a lot of people. But I'm not sure if I believe in it, frankly. I think if you work for someone else, you're not in control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me isn't security. You know, I think under the guise of a pension and 401k and all this stuff, like it can feel that way until the second you're let go or your boss tells you, you know what, I'm shutting the business down. I'm going to go surfing in Bali or whatever. It's like, so yeah, I think I would say having your own, something that's your own, whether it's music that you can control how much effort you put into is really, there's just so much there. There's so much to be gained from it. And you gain in my experience, like all the best stuff is actually at the lowest point, right? When everything's going good and you're winning, it's like, that's easy. You don't really develop when you're winning. You develop like when you kind of like, it's hard and you can't figure it out. And you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to be doing right now? How am I supposed to get through this? And you actually thread the needle and make it all work. And you make it to the end of the tour. And like, no one's patting you on the back, but you get to just have that little moment being like, man, we did it. We landed the plane, you know? And that to me is more satisfying than like the big wins or whatever, you know?
In your international touring career, is there one horrifying day that like you remember that like when things went so wrong that you wondered if Mercury was in retrograde? That's what I started to believe. I was like, wait, I don't think that's a real thing, but didn't they just say that Mercury is in retrograde? All these planes got canceled. Our hotels got canceled. The vans got canceled. Like, what is happening?
I mean, I think there's only been a few shows where I really blew it. And I feel like I've kind of understood that now and understood what how I handled it was not the way to handle it. So yeah, I'm a big believer in that whole concept of extreme ownership, right? Like if something happens, it's my band. It's like, it's on me, right? It's not, I don't turn around and snap at the bass player. That's my bass player. Like it's my job to lead the band to glory or whatever. I remember one time I was touring solo, and when I tour solo, I usually just tour with an acoustic guitar. It doesn't have a pickup or anything in it. You know, we just mic it up. And that works fine if you're doing your own shows. In this case, I was opening for this like dubstep band in Berlin at this like, you know, noisy club. Everyone's smoking, drinking. And I get up there and like, I couldn't hear anything. Like it was like Beatles at Shea Stadium. Like I just couldn't hear myself. What I was doing didn't feel like it was translating anywhere. The place was packed. But I played 5 or 6 songs and then I didn't flip out. I just sort of was like, all right, you know, thanks so much for having me. Good night. And I walked off and the promoter was like, what are you doing? Like, play a few more songs, you know, you have more time. And I was like, no, I don't, like, it's not working. And he was kind of like, okay, cool. Like he was fine. But then I heard afterwards that there were people there at the show who had driven like, you know, from Dusseldorf or whatever, like they'd driven hours to come see me play and they were bummed, you know? And suddenly I was like, oh, right. I thought it was all about me. It's never about me. It's not about me. It's about them. Those guys came. They were psyched to hear Hockey Teeth and whatever other tunes that they were digging on at the time. And like, I just wasn't able to deliver. And that really bummed me out for a long time. And I've kind of since then, like, I don't really get bogged down in sonic problems. The way I think a lot of artists do, if it's like, oh, it doesn't sound the way I want it to sound, I can't do the thing I want to do. It's like, you can always do something. You can always figure out a way. And so again, like that low moment was probably like a massive learning experience for me. And I have had many like that. So just trying to take the high road in all those situations is always the play, I think.
All right, let's take let's go out with maybe the one true banger on the record, Gone.
Sure.
Girl Gone. Love the crunchy guitar leading it, but I think that again there's there's some edge in here that I really appreciate. We all have the ex, the lady or you know, whoever was in your past, that it was like an irresponsible choice, and yet it was like the best thing at the time.
Sure.
You know? Tell me about going back in time and creating this song. Like, how did this happen?
Well, I just sort of had the way the chord changes there to me are kind of maybe the more interesting thing. Like, it on its surface, it just sounds like a straight ahead kind of blues song. But the way the chords change in the middle of the beat and everything kind of, to me, just feel special and unique. And I just love that as a platform for writing. Same thing for this song. I probably wrote like 20 different verses. My whole life was just a passing chord. Gone girl, gone. Meeting her was just dumb luck. I was living in my pickup truck. She opened up like an oyster shucked. Gone girl, gone. I can't get her out of my head. And now I'm coming off the pain meds. I'm still sleeping on a sofa bed. Gone girl, gone. You know, you heard it. It's just, it's sort of a get the groove going and then just stay in that groove for 4 or 5 minutes or. But I like to try and include little hints of modernity in the lyrics. Like, for instance, I sing about OnlyFans, and I just try and hint at things so that it doesn't sound, there's no part of me that wants to be nostalgic or old-timey.
Right.
And so I try and just sort of get that message across in the lyrics, you know? Because it would be so easy with a song like that to sort of go in that direction. And that's really the challenge to me, is like, how do you pull a song like that off and it sound fresh and new and of the time we're living in? And so lyrics, I think, are really the main point. And I every line in that song, it's just fun. I just love singing it, you know? Can't get her out of my head. I was coming off the pain med, still sleeping on a sofa bed. It just paints a picture that somehow I'm interested in, that's sort of dark and tragic, but somehow I still want to be there, you know. Topless bar, gone girl, gone. Ain't no one loving me for loving's sake. Ain't no one baking me a wedding cake. So you can jump into a frozen lake. Gone girl, gone. Most people just think too much. Always talking about such and such. I'm happy being out of touch. Gone girl,
the idea that you're happy being out of touch, you know, I think
that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah.
A lot of us need to be with the internet, and it's like, you can be only so far into that toxic whirlpool before it starts to burn you.
Right.
I mean, I appreciate TikTok and some of these, you know, platforms as honestly learning tools, you know. I mean, I cook a lot of recipes from stuff I find on TikTok every day.
Really?
You know?
Wow.
Because that's where the algorithm has now like shaped itself for me. But like when I first got on there, it was half naked teenagers basically dancing. And you're like, you could see the danger behind various doors. It's just like somehow you have to like get in front of the right doors or something, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, geez, I mean, that's there's smarter minds than me certainly working on this and debating this from both sides, but it would seem that the internet maybe you know, it started with this idea of like this idealistic, oh, it's going to be this free space where people can do whatever they want and they can communicate and no one's going to get in the way, and it's totally turned into the opposite thing completely. you know? And so for me, I have to put boundaries. I don't, you know, I have other people who do the posting and who manage the accounts, and I just get the fun of making the videos. I get to make the art, and then I have to admit that I don't have the capacity or the desire to really go much further than that, you know?
Yeah.
And so each one of us kind of figures out where that line is and what feels good to us. So yeah, I am happy being out of touch to some degree. You know, I'm sure that video of that woman's, breakfast was riveting, but I'm okay not knowing about it too, you know?
Well, I wonder how I can keep my daughter safe from the darkness that is behind door number three, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's up to us as gatekeepers to be like, yeah, there's a beautiful part of this world and a dark, scary part of the world. And I hope that she can know which path to choose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, because at a certain point, it's not up to me. Like, she's her own person, you know?
That's right. No, you got a lot of years before that. You got to worry about being left alone. But yeah, I mean, you know, we got to not be afraid to exercise parental authority.
Yeah.
And all that means is just model the behavior, right? I think we've all come to a point with smoking or drinking where, yeah, you kind of know that there's a line. What are you going to do in front of your kids, right?
Right.
What kind of behavior around those two things are you going to model in front of them? For most modern parents, they're at least aware of it and make some effort to limit that exposure, right? And I think most people are just haven't caught up yet with regard to the technology. I think I was reading about drunk driving. They didn't have rules around drunk driving for the first 50 years of automobiles. Automobiles yeah. existed. People were getting wasted and crashing into each other, and it never dawned on anyone like, maybe we should put some rules around this.
And there weren't
maybe
even seat we should belts. Say,
well, yeah, and but even once they got the seatbelts, it was like there was nobody even talking about the fact that, like, you know, and now if you drove drunk, you would feel so much shame because you know how dangerous that is, not just to you and your family, but someone else's family and all that, you know, all that stuff that we just now is just understood. And I think that the technology it's the same thing. We know how dangerous this is, but most people are just not there yet. They're not willing to put really defined boundaries, not just for their children, but for themselves. And I would imagine, and I hope, that in 20 or 30 years, there's no discussion about, hey, why do you have your phone out at the supper table? Everybody knows that you don't do that because right. you don't do that because it's not a good idea. You know, I think that in 20 years, if your kid can make eye contact with someone and introduce themselves and say hello and shake hands with someone, that's going to be a superpower. I would encourage all parents to just spend lots of time in that world. These products, like the thing that you and I are talking on right now, it's so intuitive. No one had to teach me how to use an iPhone. Like, it's yeah. just, it's set up out of the box for like a 2-year-old to just swipe and yeah. you know, it's literally designed that way. And I would say, find the other things in your life that are maybe require a little bit more effort, but are so much more rewarding, you know, whether it's playing guitar or surfing or whatever else you can get into. It's like, just find something that's harder to do. You'll feel better at the end of the day, I think.
Starting out, I had no idea. No idea how this would end. To know I'd meet the woman of my dreams, but fall in love with her best friend. Lord knows we all make mistakes, and I'll admit I made a few. But every twist and turn along the way only led me here to you. You know that's true. Yes, you do. In all I do, always do for you, always be true. Years pass by.
Amen, brother.
Right on. Well, thanks for the call. Well, very look forward good. To run into you, man. Thanks again for the call. And enjoy, man. Enjoy the time with the family.
I always appreciate what you do, man. It means the world that you can get on here with me. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Right on, all brother. Man. Have a good day.
Bye bye.
Our family grew and she was all alone. I was working most all the time. Told myself that we were doing fine. I only told myself a lie.
There he goes, Afy Gervainen, a.k.a. Bahamas. Thank you so much to him for getting on the line with me. If you haven't listened to the first part of our conversation, go back to theshowontheroad.com/episodes, and we dive more into his newest record, Bootcut. And if you go back to 2020, I believe, you can hear our whole conversation about his record, Sad Hunk. Some of my favorite music ever created was created by this guy, and I'm so glad we can end this fifth season, 2023, on a big note like this. If you're curious, my band Dust Bowl Revival has one more show this year, December 23rd, Saturday night, at Pappy and Harriet's in Pioneertown, and then we'll be heading back to Northern California, playing at Sweetwater Music Hall, Harlow's in Sacramento, the Guild Theater in Menlo Park, and then way up in Carson City at a new place called the Nashville Social Club, January 10th through 13th. Please check it out, dustbowlrevival.com, and then we're heading to England, Scotland, Denmark, Germany, and Sweden. We'll see you very soon, I hope. If you have artists that I should be talking to for our sixth season, yes, next year, send me a line on our Instagram, Show on the Road Podcast. I try to listen to every type of music and give it a fair shot, and I would love to hear your band, your new music. Please send me an email to showontheroadpod@gmail.com. As always, the Show on the Road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Z Lupitin, and we are part of the Osiris Podcast Network. Stay safe, have a great new year, and we'll see you next year on the trail.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.